Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 47. This week is just Andrew, myself, and my cold, and my cup of coffee. We talk about a few cameras, some books, and some emails, and a call-in from Jimmy Hickford. Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 47. Andrew, how you doing?
Yeah, not bad, yeah. Really. I guess, you know. As the weeks rumble by, it's been brass monkey weather, and now it's warmed up a bit. And I went out for a long walk yesterday. A long walk by my standards, but I met up with Jimmy Hickford, and we had a bit of a wander around the fens, and I posted it online, and people said, "What are the fens?" Apparently, it's a part of a fish that you don't eat. Is that right?
I guess.
No, I don't know.
I don't know either.
So it's been a good week. I took my Harman Titan for a spin, which I think you're going to talk about later.
Yep.
And I took some Ilford Ortho for a spin, and got very cold because the wind was howling. But we had fun.
Good. Did Mike go with you? Wasn't Mike with you? Mike Walker?
No, he lives. Okay. He lives out near, not far from the Ilford factory in Cheshire. So he's probably 180 miles from me. So maybe 2.5-3 hours.
I was following. I saw it on the Facebook group, the post you guys did. I thought that I thought he had met up with you guys. But oh, that's cool. Yeah.
No, I've been trying to get Mike to come on the show, but he's very reticent considering how he likes to promote his cameras on the Facebook group. I love it the way, Mike, if you're listening, we love you. But I still find it funny the way, as soon as we get new members, he goes,
"Hey,
hello from Mike Walker, the maker of Harman pinhole cameras and many others. You can find them all here."
Yeah, right. Come check them out.
And I met up with Graham from the Sunny 16 podcast briefly on... day was that? Wednesday, I think it was. We met up. I was traveling down to Oxfordshire for a work conference, and I messaged him, and he took a break from his gardening, and we met at a great place that I haven't been to in years called Secondhand Darkroom Supplies.
Yeah, he talks about that place all the time.
Yeah, well, you walk in there, and downstairs, it's like darkroom stuff piled up in heaps. I mean, he clearly doesn't know what he's got in there. There's tanks and hangers and reels, stainless steel stuff, and enlargers. This is all downstairs. This isn't just the proper shop. And you wander upstairs, and then he's got better quality enlargers and lenses and paper and film and boxes of stuff. And it's all he needs is a cafe, and you'd just be able to spend all day there.
Rummaging through the bins.
Yeah, no, it is. It's a incredible place. It's kind of out in the middle of nowhere in the Oxfordshire countryside. But I guess it's probably 5 to 10 miles from where Graham lives, because we met there, and then we went back to his house for a cup of tea, and he showed me the sacred place where he does his podcasts from.
Mm.
And he took delivery of a camera in the post. And he bought a camera while we were in SDS. He came away with a Yashica Mat LM, which is the one with the light meter on.
Cool.
And it had a roll of Fuji Acros in it and a lens hood. Cool. And it was £59, which was, what's that, about $70, I suppose. So that was a good result for him.
Yeah, cool.
So a very exciting week I've had.
Hopefully his... that camera doesn't go the way of Ronald, his large format camera he has that I think is sad life.
Well, he's taking delivery of an Intrepid camera.
Oh, cool.
So he's he's bought an Intrepid. He hasn't got it yet, but it's on the way. I think he was going to try out pinhole photography, and then somebody told him, I think it was Alex Purcell, not to bother with the pinhole lens board that you can get for it, because it doesn't give very good results. So I had to say, actually, I've had some really good results with it. So I guess it's just the skill of the person using it. So I said, don't listen to that Welshman. He clearly doesn't know what he's talking about.
clearly. I gotcha. Cool.
What have you been up to anyway?
I've been sick all week. I'm finally on the feeling better side of having a cold, so not much actually. I got out in the middle of the week and did some printing.
I saw that day. You had some little those cute little contact prints from the Harman camera.
Yeah, that was from the 4x5 that I got from Mike.
You're going to talk about that later.
Yeah, I went ahead and just went out. I had to stop waiting for the perfect moment. It was really windy, and I was like, and it was raining, so I went and did some stuff and finally got out and just went and took some pictures here. So
it couldn't have been as windy as it was on the fens yesterday.
I bet it was. It was blowing probably it was probably blowing 20, 25 miles an hour.
Mm.
15 kilometers.
Mm-hmm. No, I know what miles an hour are. No, we have
miles. 50 kilometers. I forget which way it goes.
No, we use miles per hour as well. It's just that we use miles per hour for driving and then metric for pretty much everything else, I think.
It was blowing probably 15 to 20 with gusts up to probably 25 or so. So it was really, really windy. That's why everybody's like, wow, these pictures are really sharp. And I was like, oh, man, I couldn't even imagine what it was like if the wind wasn't blowing, because I could see it moving, you know what I mean? I just really wanted to try that, the ortho film, you know, and I just didn't want to, like, do it in my yard, you know, so I just kind of, like, I'm just going to
Don't preempt what you're going to be talking about. Why don't you tell folks what we're going to be doing for the next 5 minutes or so?
You have nobody to listen to but Andrew and myself and a cup of coffee. No guests this week, right? Just us. So we got some emails we're going to talk about. A couple cameras we've been wanting to talk about. A call-in from Jimmy Hickford.
My mate Jimmy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, he called us. So we're going to talk about all that stuff. Do you want to go ahead and we can go ahead and just play his message and then we can talk about it?
Absolutely.
All right.
Hi guys, it's Jimmy Hickford here. Got a few questions to ask you, if you don't mind me asking them. As you know, I'm getting into Pinhole. I'm waiting for a Reality So Subtle 6x6, but I'm also thinking of making a Pinhole camera. Thanks to Toby van der Velde for his pictures and bits and pieces on Twitter regarding his foam core camera. I've bought the bits and pieces, but I'm not sure on how to work out various bits and pieces. So the first question I've got is, how do you measure a pinhole once you've made it? Because I can poke a needle through a bit of tin can and sand it down and make sure it's that, but I don't know exactly how big that pinhole is. Now, would you go through any method of working out how big this pinhole is, or would you just guess it at 0.3 mil or something like that? The next question is paper, ISO for paper negatives. I've heard various different things about it and reciprocity for paper and blah, blah, blah. But I've also heard it's somewhere between ISO 3 and ISO 6. Now, I've heard ISO 6 mentioned quite a few times, and was wondering how you work that out. I'm going to be using Ilford Multigrade Pearl paper, which I know Andrew is a fan of. Paper negatives. Also, pre-flashing. I've heard Andrew talk about this several times. I thought I was going to go and look it up, but yeah, why not? Why not ask the experts? So paper, pre-flashing paper for doing paper negatives. How do you do it? How long do I need to do it? How does it help? So yeah, anything like that? Any other tips for us beginners on pinhole and on paper negatives with pinhole? If you've got any suggestions, let us have them, and it'll be interesting to hear what you've got to say. Thanks so much, guys. Have a great rest of the podcast. Bye.
So that was Jimmy.
And
he says that he has a Reality coming from James, a 6x6.
He has. At the moment, he's just been, well, I say just, he's been shooting with my 045, which I've now got back as of yesterday. And he also bought a pinhole adapter for his Hasselblad back. That's a company called Camera Hacks, I think. You can find them on Facebook. And he's been using that. He's just started darkroom printing, but he ordered his a while ago. And he said that it's been I think it's been shipped now, or it's due to be shipped, so he'll have it shortly.
So he asks us, well, he does. First, he says he wants to make a foam core camera like Toby's, because he's been seeing what Toby's been doing, Toby Vandeveld. And he asks us how to measure the pinhole once you get it made, I guess, so that you can, you know, figure out your capture and so you can make exposures. I haven't. I've made some pinholes, but I haven't bothered measuring them. I really just, it's been so small, you know. There's a talk about it on the Facebook group. Somebody was scanning them. Weren't they scanning them?
They were. Yeah, I think there are several ways, from what I can. In fact, there's lots of folk far better qualified than sounds like either me or you.
Yeah.
But you can do what Diane Peterson does and use handheld drill bits. And some people can use those, and some people can't. I do have some. In fact, I bought some cheap ones from China, which means they'll probably break as soon as I use them. But I'm planning on having a go. So I suppose the advantage of using drills is that they come in known diameter sizes. So you can, you know, if you use the 0.3 millimeter one, then I guess you're pretty confident that you've got a 0.3 millimeter
0.3.
hole.
Right.
You probably still need to sand it down to get it thin, because, you know, the thickness of the material that you're making the pinhole in, the thickness of it will determine in part how much coverage you get, because if it's too thick, you know, you're going to get less coverage. If you make a really thin shim, then you're going to get wider coverage, aren't you?
So what he means is that if you use a thicker piece of material to make your pinhole, you're essentially bringing the light through a small tunnel, as opposed to having a thinner piece of material where it can actually just come right through.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But so some people use what's called beading needles, BEADING. And the extra fine ones, I think, are 0.4 of a millimeter, which is pretty useful, I guess.
Yeah.
So you could use those. Or you can kind of guess it and then scan. As you say, you can use a scanner. Now, I've not done this, but if you go back to our guest of last week, Lena Kullberg, and if you go online to pinhole.se, pinhole.se, she goes into some detail about how she scans her pinholes to be able to measure them.
Yeah.
It depends how much effort you want to put into it. I think it depends what sort of end result you're looking for. You know, I think, you know, if we're using our Reality or our Mike Walker cameras, we're now getting used to these exceedingly sharp pinholes. And part of me thinks, I don't know, the next pinhole camera I make, I just want to make a small hole and not worry about it, really, because get something, you know, what I want something that perhaps isn't as sharp as the Reality cameras.
That's what I'm going to do. I have a totally. No, I've been thinking about the same thing. I have a little, you know, Altoids are.
Yeah, mints or something, aren't they?
They make nice little tins. You know, I have one that I've spray painted out in my garage that I'm going to make a little camera. And I was thinking about doing the same thing, like drilling a hole and putting a proper pinhole in a piece of aluminum and making one to put in it. But, you know, I think I'm going to take it, just poke a hole in it and put a piece of light tight gaffer's tape over it and just try it. You know?
Yeah. Get something out of the ordinary, something that isn't so sharp.
Sure.
You know, and you can, we love our Reality cameras and our Mike Walker cameras, but, you know, I get this kind of weird sense when I'm using them that, you know, this is a pinhole camera that, you know, some of the most beautiful images I see online are made with homemade pinhole cameras with pinholes that aren't laser drilled, you know?
Yeah, sure.
Some real dreamlike images, some very evocative images full of emotion.
Right.
And I think sometimes you can lose that with the sharpness of some of these modern cameras.
Yep. But they're all great.
Anyway, absolutely. Yeah, I love them all. So what else did he say?
He was asking about paper negatives, what they should be rated at. He says he does ISO 4. A lot of people say anywhere from 3 to 6. He's using a popular one, the Ilford Multigrade Pearl paper.
Yeah.
And he wanted to know what we use or what our recommendations would be. I've done a little bit of paperwork, not a lot, with the Harman stuff and some other cameras I've made, and I think I rated mine at 3. I think it was 3.
I've used multi-grade Pearl, and I've rated it at 3 in the Truffle cam. I think it, when I start exploring it a bit more, I'm going to just experiment a little bit. But like anything, Jimmy, you know, just rated at 3, see how it goes, you know, see what sort of results. So you're making paper negatives. You have some degree of control with paper negatives. So you have your image. Once you've developed it, you know, you'll then be, presumably, Jimmy, you're going to be contact printing it with something. So, you know, go back and listen to Andrew Sanderson's talk we did for him, or go online and buy Andrew's book called All About Paper Negatives. It's a blurb book all about paper negatives, and that'll really give you some good
insight.
Good insight, because you can do dodging and burning by using a pencil and, you know, increasing the density on the back. And it's a great art form. I love contact prints.
Yeah, it can get pretty. What's the word I'm looking for? Intensive, you know, if you really, really want to get, you know, into it, and
absolutely,
just as much as printing with, you know, regular negatives traditionally, shining that way.
So experiment, Jimmy, and if you can, if you have a bit of spare cash, go and buy Andrew's book, All About Paper Negatives. I don't think it's that expensive. It's quite a thin book, but it's not that expensive, but it is very thin.
Yeah.
But it's packed full of useful information.
And then he says, he's asking about pre-flashing. I haven't done any pre-flashing either, so
I can talk about that. You'll be surprised to know. So, Jimmy, you can pre-flash normal darkroom paper, so let's just talk about that briefly. So what are we talking about with pre-flashing? We're talking about sensitizing the paper, essentially to let it overcome its threshold, so any subsequent exposure is less on the paper to start recording tones. So that has the effect in conventional printing of controlling contrast. And if you've got highlights in your image that are difficult to control, you can pre-flash the paper. And the way you do that conventionally is to take some of the photographic paper, set your enlarger. You don't have to use an enlarger, but I would use an enlarger with a timer. Push the head all the way to the top of the column and stop down the light. Just have no filtration in, probably. And just do a range of exposures from probably 1 to 5 seconds to get a feel and develop the paper and see what you get. If you get a range of tones from gray to black, then you need to give it less time. So half a second, it stops, or maybe introduce a filter into the enlarger, because what you're looking for with conventional flashing is clear white paper in your first strip, and then as you move along along the test strip, you're looking to see the first discernible bit of gray, and that's the first tone that the paper is recording. And then the step immediately before that is your flashing time. So your flashing time for conventional processing is the last bit of white before you see a little bit of gray. So that's with conventional paper, but with Harman Direct Positive, it's much the same, except the aim is to, and actually I'm quoting here because I wanted to be really sure of what I was talking about. I'm quoting from Harman's technical literature. The aim is to select the tonal step. So you do your same test strip, but you want to select the step that just shows the slightest indication of shadow detail in the black density. So, and the corresponding time for this is called the pre-flash time. So as soon as you just get to see the first bit of black shadow detail, that would be your pre-flash. Or you could just take the one before that. So either the first bit of blackness in the shadow, if you see what I mean, or the one before that, that would be the time. Does that make sense? But Jimmy, if you go to the Harman website and go to their page on direct positive, you can download their technical information, Harman Direct Positive paper, fiber-based, glossy.
Yeah, there you go.
And of course, that helps as well, because this paper does have a reputation of being very, very contrasty. So in much the same way as we use it for conventional image making in the darkroom, this will help control your density. And it shows this technical document is very, very useful. It gives some typical exposure times. In bright sunshine, it says 1 to 2 minutes, overcast, 4 to 5 minutes, so on and so forth. And then it shows two pictures, one using no pre-flash and one using pre-flash.
I tried it once, but it didn't. I had my trench coat on and everything, and it didn't do anything.
Well, did you do any tests on it first? I tell you what.
I'm just joking. I was trying to bring in my full length gray trench coat joke into the pre-flash.
Oh, I see. Yeah, sorry, you were way. I was being deadly serious, and I wasn't picking up on your whimsy. Interesting. If you look at this technical sheet, they show two photographs, and the first photograph is with no pre-flash, and the second one is pre-flashed. And if you look at the two, most people would probably say, actually, I prefer the one with no pre-flash because it's very, very punchy and contrasty.
Contrasty, yeah.
Yeah, and the other one has got more, technically, it's probably more correct in that it's got a greater range of grays and tones in there. But it seems to have lost a little bit of impact. So do some with pre-flash and some without pre-flash and see what you like. I think Tony Hertz, who we spoke to a few weeks ago, he uses a lot of this, and I don't think he pre-flashes. I'm trying to remember.
No, he doesn't. He just puts it in and lets it rip.
Yeah.
But one thing I found about it, and I'm sure it's probably going to hold true for regular paper too, you have to pick your day, you know. Where I live, if I went out and just shot paper negatives or the direct positive stuff.
Yeah.
Like right now I have full blue skies and complete direct sun, you know, and it's like that all the time. So I don't know.
It says remember
days, you know.
It says here, remember, with direct positive paper, less exposure is needed to make the image darker, unlike conventional photo papers. So you've got to think back to front, haven't you?
Yep. Yeah.
But there's
that's right.
It's a very useful document, so that the process of making test strips is shown there. So it shows you two test strips and it shows you which one it chose.
Yeah.
So go and read the literature, Jimmy.
Yeah.
See you, Jimmy.
I got some postcards.
Yep.
And I wanted to say thanks to Matt Jones.
Mm-hmm.
He sent me a postcard from he's in Thailand. I'm not even going to try and pronounce the name of the city or town he lives in, because I would maybe not. Krasang Isan, Thailand.
I know he's on the negative.
Call us in and tell us a correct pronunciation for that, Matt. Because
yeah, come on, Matt, do a call in. You're one of our moderators on the Facebook group, so do a call in.
But it's a cool. It's a negative of a. He didn't make a positive. He just shot the negative. It's a temple.
Yep.
Yeah, it's really cool. He says that it's 400 meters from his house in Thailand. Happy New Year, Matt Jones. Yeah, he says from his. Did he make this camera? He says he used a 5x7 curved plane pinel. Is that one that he made, or is that one that he is? Either way,
I can't remember. We'll have to get him on as a Facebook group moderator. We really ought to get him on. He's being interviewed by Mike Gutterman and Andre tonight, isn't he? They've actually got him on first, so we can listen to that. I did put a couple of questions up for him.
We're coming for you, Matt.
Yeah, your card is marked.
Yeah. And then I got a card from a Mr. Daniel Novak.
Mm.
He's in New York, and yep. He sent me a pinhole picture of, I guess, from when he went to Hawaii, and he was in Kauai.
Yep.
He sent me a picture of, looks like lava rocks. And it must have been like a tide pool there, you know. You can see the water's all white and foamy, and it's really cool looking. So thanks, Daniel. I appreciate it. He said that he just wanted to say hi. And thank you for all your work on the podcast. So clearly he's talking to me.
Yeah.
Do you get much postcards, Andrew?
Yeah, I have the Temple one. I'm just reminding myself. I've got the Temple one.
Yeah.
The negative.
Oh, cool. Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah. Got that one.
I actually ordered I ordered a box. I couldn't find I've been trying to find the Ilford postcard stock. I finally found it on B&H.
Yep.
And the last time I ordered it, I think it was like a 25 box count.
100. Normally, I buy it in boxes of 100 from.
Well, that's what I had to do. I ended up just buying a box of 100 of it.
Yeah, I've never seen it in anything less than 100.
Yeah, the last time I got it, it was like a 25 pack. It was I don't know, 10 or 11 bucks, you know. So I was like, yeah, I'll give it a try because I didn't want to spend. I think it was $35 for the 100 count, you know.
Yeah, I think I bought some recently to send to our Swedish Viking friend. And I paid £40. So that's a good price. Yeah. You've got a better price than I can buy it in the UK.
Plus free shipping because I spent over $49. I bought another box of, I don't remember what else I bought. I bought something else, but
I'm out of all my postcard paper now. I printed a few pinhole pictures the other week, ready for Moni's, postcard swap, you know, so.
I think I'm going to sign up for that.
You should do. Time. It's great fun, but. You know?
Yeah, she started it when she came on the show. Yep. She turned me on to it, and I did it for a few swaps, and then I ran out of postcard stuff, and I kind of got behind doing stuff, so I haven't done it since then. But
yeah, I've run out now as well.
Yeah. So yeah, cool.
So we love getting postcards. We love getting prints. I love them.
Mm. I've got them. I'm gonna get myself in my little.
But you can just send your. In your cupboard.
Yeah, I'm going to put up some of that foam core. Not foam core, but the cork.
Uh-huh. The cork material. You know? Like a pinboard. Yeah.
Yeah, like a pinboard so I can start pinning up all these pictures and stuff that people are sending me because I like
looking at them. I've got mine. I'm staring at my wall and I put mine on the wall with blue tack. You remember blue tack?
Oh, I have tons of blue tack.
Yeah. So you didn't know what it was last time we spoke.
I still don't know what it was.
Anyway, so what do you want to talk about next? I've got
I got this Mike's camera here in front of me. I went and shot with it the other day, so
tell people what camera that is.
Yeah. That's the Harman Titan, the 4x5. Mm-hmm. And it's a great camera. It's like I was talking about the other day when I went out. It was really windy and there was sand blowing. And a very mild little tiny bit of rain every once in a while. And I just laughed at it. Because this camera is molded plastic. And
You laughed in the face of the elements. Of the elements.
Yep. Because mm-hmm. I had this camera. I like it. It has a bubble level, a little spirit level on for each orientation for landscape, you know, doing portraits, horizontal, vertical. It has a cold shoe mount on it if you wanted to make yourself a form of a, you know, a viewfinder. So you could hold it up to your face and look through it and stand around the world like those movie directors used to do whenever they would have.
Because this doesn't have any sight lines on, I have one as well from Mike. Because this doesn't have any sight lines on, what do you think, apart from experience and using it a lot, is there an easy way to get an estimate of what the image is going to look like?
No, I mean, probably what I would suggest doing would be find yourself a wall somewhere, get yourself a tape measure, you know, and think about how wide you think it's going to be. Find yourself a few marks on the wall. Be like, okay, I think it's going to be this wide, you know, and take a few images, take a picture, and then, you know, step back 5 feet and take another picture. Remember those marks, develop the pictures, paper or whatever. And then just kind of compare notes, and that's the only way I know how to do it, is just to shoot it and get used to it.
Does it work? Ansel Adams with his lens, I don't know if it works quite the same for pinhole cameras. I guess it might do. Ansel Adams used to talk about making a viewfinder with cardboard. So if you're using 4:5 film, cut out a hole 4 inches by 5 inches. And then he would say, if you're using a 150mm focal length lens, you hold the card that distance from your eye, and that's effectively your viewer.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Mike, you need to tell us. If we get a piece of 4:5 card and we hold this 72mm, 2.8 inches from our eyes, is that a fairly accurate representation of what we're going to see? I guess it probably must be.
Yeah, I would say it is, because...
Because that's 3 inches from your eyes. It's quite close. So this take a bit of 4:5.
This, I have the 72mm cone.
Yeah, me too.
Which is wide. And it was nowhere near as wide as I thought it was going to be. So I would think that that would be pretty close. Yeah, that would be pretty close.
I think that method does work, because if you go to the Zero Image website, they actually sell, and you don't need to buy one, they sell a plastic 2.25 square hole with a tether on it, you know. Mm. And I think it's heavy, and you can use that, and they say just hold it up 50, whatever the focal length is on the Zero, I can't remember, but you hold it that close to your eye, and that gives you an approximation. So I think if you take a piece of 4:5 card and you hold it at the focal length, that's going to give you an approximation of what you're seeing. Sure. But I stand to be corrected on those things.
The camera's nice. It has felt on the inside for your light seals. And your 4x5 slide right in. It's nice
And you slide the double dark slide in, and they're held in place, aren't they, quite nicely?
Yeah, nice and tight. It's nice not to have to worry about putting it in a bag, you know, like before I started walking the other day when it was really windy, I just went ahead and put it on my tripod. You know what I mean? I just walked with it. I didn't even try and carry it, you know, like with a camera bag or anything, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And when I got back, I just threw it in the back of the truck, and I mean, inside my truck, and it's not a big deal, you know.
And how are you controlling the shutter, which is effectively a lens cap, isn't it?
Yeah, what I did was, when it's really windy, that lens cap will kind of flop around in the breeze, you know.
Yes.
So I took it and tucked it around the hot shoe, mm-hmm. the hot shoe on top. Depending on which way you're doing, if I was doing just to hold it, you know. But what I do is I put the film holder in. I don't like the lens cover. As soon as I pulled it off and I felt the resistance on it, I said, that's not going to work for me. No. So what I do is I put the 4x5 in. I take the lens cover off, put my finger over the pinhole, remove the dark slide, move my finger, and then just do reverse. When the exposure's over, I just put my finger on it, then slide the dark side back in. And I'll even use the lens cap, you know.
No, that's exactly what I do. In fact, the lens cap starts to become a bit of a problem because, as you say, it just flaps around in the wind.
Yeah, it does. So
did Mike send you a spare pinhole holder?
No.
I nearly threw mine in the dustbin because I was throwing the packaging out the other day, about a month after I'd got this camera, and I found in a little plastic envelope a spare pinhole without the pinhole in, you know, the little holder.
You can
take the pinhole out, and he said for you to play with. So I guess I could just make my own pinhole and have it less sharp than Mike's.
Right.
So that's quite cool. So maybe you had one and you've thrown it away because I nearly threw mine away.
No, I went through everything really good. I didn't get one. So you're just more loved than I am, Andrew, I guess.
Clearly. Yes.
So downside to this camera, there's only two things for me. One of them isn't really a downside. It's kind of something that can be fixed, but it is really light. So if you go out on a really windy day, it's not as big as an 8x10 film holder, so it won't catch wind as much, but it still will catch wind if it's really windy, you know?
Mm.
So you have to just kind of pick your days and just be mindful of weather conditions, you know? And that'll solve that, you know what I mean? The day I went out, I normally wouldn't have gone out, but it was kind of like the only day where I had a chance to go and do anything. And I just really wanted to take some pictures with the ortho film, you know? I had it loaded up and I just wanted to go. So I didn't really, I just kind of said, I'm just going to go make some test exposures because I hadn't used it yet.
Yeah.
So that was kind of my bad. But it is light, just, you know, so if you are going to be out in a windy situation, just that'd be something to think about. But you can fix that if you brought a camera bag or, you know, whenever I go to the beach, sometimes I'll bring a, like a plastic grocery bag.
Fill it with sand.
Fill it with sand and just hang it. Yeah, I have one that I used to keep in like my camera bag, but I didn't bring my camera bag with me. So I probably would have done that if I was out there, but I didn't think about it. So that's the solution for that.
I was using mine yesterday, my Walker pinhole, and it was really, really windy. I mean, I don't know what it was gusting to, but I mean, it was windy. And I had my lightweight Chinese-made clone travel tripod, which I bought off Amazon for about 30 quid. And I was surprised at how little it did move. You know, I used my body a bit as a windshield, so maybe that helped.
That's what I did too.
But it was okay. I think I've seen reviews, if you go onto YouTube and look at the review of the 8x10 version, then that is a big sail in the wind.
That's what I was talking about, you know. I mean, like, yeah, it's not gonna catch as much wind as that, but
no,
if it's gusty and you're not standing in front of it, and you kind of, if you're making shorter exposures and you can kind of just time it in between the gusts, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It'd be all right. But so the other thing that I don't like about this camera isn't really anything as far as design goes. But I wish Mike would make a wider cone for it, because I do prefer the ultra wide.
This gives you another option, doesn't it, for another look? So you can take this camera out with us once you've used it a bit and you can see how it looks. You know that, okay, I'm going to select this camera when I want to take this kind of pinhole picture.
Sure, I don't really do much of the tighter classic focal lengths, you know.
Maybe you should.
My thing is getting, I like to get uncomfortably close to stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And that 35 millimeter mm-hmm. range is kind of where I like to be. So that would be my only suggestion, Mike, would be if you could come up with an ultra wide cone.
I think the beauty of this camera is that it is modular, isn't it? And this is unlike,
yeah, absolutely.
I think apart from maybe the Zero, you can buy inserts,
the body things. Yeah.
Mm. But for this camera, you can buy different cones. So the 110 cone and a mm-hmm. 150 cone.
And the 72.
And the 72, which comes as standard.
Yeah.
So that's almost telephoto. See,
yeah,
the angle of view for the 150 cone is 57 degrees. Well, that's, you know, that's kind of
pretty tight.
like a standard lens almost. Yeah, well, it would be a standard lens, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
150 on 4.5 is
Yeah.
equivalent of a 50 mil on 35. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say 50 or 60 or something like that, I think.
Mm.
So I mean, I've done some tighter pinhole stuff like that, but I don't know. I just kind of always I like the crazy distortion and the in that wideness and that pinhole super close, you know. So I would definitely recommend it to anyone, especially if you're looking to be able to change your focal length. You could carry the 72 and then the longer one with you know, the 105 or something. And yeah, like you said, I mean, that's two cameras in one, basically. If you live in an area that's wet, you know, and rainy or misty and foggy, you know, you have no worries with this thing. You can, you know, I mean, just take it home and let it dry. You know, it's got to be pretty close to being, I'm not going to say bulletproof, but you know, pinhole or abuse proof for the most part. You know what I mean? I mean, if you dropped it in the water, a river or something, you might lose your film inside of it, but just take it home and dry it with a dryer, or just put it on your dish rack, you know, and let it dry, and then
Yeah.
use it the next day, you know, no worries. So, for
Yeah.
all those reasons,
No, it's
it's
good.
great.
So it gets a thumbs up from us.
Yeah, sure.
I had one a few years ago, then I sold it, and then I bought another one when Mike was doing a bit of a discount on the Facebook group.
Yeah, that's where I got mine from too. I think you copied me, didn't
I did. Yeah.
you?
Well, I've
So
been, you
Mike.
know, it's one of those cameras that I sold, and I kind of regretted it because I kept looking at images of mine on the Flickr site that I'd taken with it, and I thought, man, I got some great results with that camera. What? And I couldn't work out why I sold it, but I sold it to fund purchases of something else. At the time, it seemed a good idea, you know.
Right. I think I might take my little electric crafts, all I have, if Mike doesn't want to make a wider cone for it, and make myself a 35 millimeter. Chop it down like a low rider, you know. Chop the cone down.
Really? Oh, don't do
Yeah.
that. No,
Why?
whoa.
Why not?
It seems drastic.
I can buy another cone, can't
Well, you could, I suppose, yeah.
I? Yeah. I don't know. So
Well, it'd be
I want a
interesting
wider
to see.
cone, Mike. Wider cone,
Yeah,
Mike.
wider cone, Mike. Okay. We'll ask him if he ever comes on the show.
Yeah.
So
So what?
shall I go through this caption competition that we've had running on the show?
Sure. Only because you brought Julie into it, and one of her first responses was how devilishly handsome this guy was. So,
Yeah, in your
I
dreams.
have a cold too, so I'm sorry for all the sniffling. Everybody who's listening, trying to keep it under wraps. Go ahead,
Yeah,
Andrew.
I
Go
am.
ahead,
Yeah.
Andrew. Make fun of me. Make fun of me, Andrew. I hope you enjoy it.
Well, for the day before my birthday, I think we must have been chatting about Northerners, mustn't we, on the show?
Yeah.
And we talked about flat caps.
Flat caps. And I said, I have a flat cap.
You did, and you foolishly decided to share a picture with me.
It's all right.
And there was we've had quite a lot of responses, and I wanted to be really impartial, so I got my good lady to be the judge. And I thought she should have made me the winner, really. Then I could have just sent myself a roll of film, because my one said mine was making some aspersions on you. But you can go to the website, the Facebook group, and see the comments. So anyway, in third place, let's just jump straight to it. Is I don't know how to pronounce his name. I'm going to butcher it, so I apologize. Apologies, Leonid. I don't think it's Leonard. Leonid Nikushin. That'll do. So
Shekin.
it could be. Yes, I haven't actually got the page up on the screen. I'm reading my wife's handwriting, which is terrible. But anyway, he said his caption for your cheeky smiley face with a flat cap on was when you are about to use the upper and lower pinhole simultaneously. So it's like this image of a cheeky, you know, mischievous boy with a flat cap on. So that was great. That was one of my favorites. Second, this was also one of my favorites. I think I would have picked these three as well. So second is from Mick Shorter. And he says, I know it's behind me, but I won't turn around. But I will not turn around. And it reminded me of our little Pomeranian dog. When she's kind of, when she wants to ignore something, she pretends it's not there by not looking at it and thinks it, well, it'll go away. I know it's behind me, but I will not turn around.
It'll go away.
And in first place, I just do a bit of a drum roll. Hang on a And I should have told Julie not to pick anyone from the States, because now I have to send a roll of film to Mr. Matt Melcher.
Ah, dear.
Well, congratulations, Matt. And Matt said, the suspect should be considered unstable. And police warned not to approach him. And police,
stay away from me.
Police warned not to approach him. Yeah.
So imagine I have a black box in front of me taking pinhole pictures too. You know.
So Matt, I'll reach out to you. You need to. If I don't think I have your address, but I may have sent you a postcard in the past. But you need to send me your address.
Send it to me. I have some film. I'll send them a couple.
Oh, months. That's very nice of you.
Yeah, don't send it all the way. I have to pay. I don't know what the shipping is from you guys to us, but from us to you, it's horrendous.
Yeah. All right. Well, Corey will send you. Will send you a roll of film.
See how good of a sport I am. And Matt has a podcast too, doesn't he? He has the Box of Cameras.
Mm-hmm.
He's been.
And he met up with Stephen Ray when Stephen was in America. I seem to remember they did a face cast together.
Yep. Yeah, they did. Yep. Stephen, we got to talk to Stephen too. We didn't get him on when he was here.
No, we didn't. No, yeah. He's been a bit quiet lately. I think he's getting back into his. He's into motor sport, isn't he? Cars,
yeah.
Things.
Racing, yeah.
Yeah. So I think he's just forgotten photography now, and he's into gone back to his first love, which is
racing
cars and things, trucks. I don't know what they are.
So congratulations, Matt.
Yeah, congratulations, Matt. You win a roll of something. We know not what.
Send me your address. And I have a couple of things I'll send you that are, there'll be surprises. Ooh. I sold all my Acros though. I don't have any more of that. It's gone. Mm-hmm. I sold all of it, so it won't be that.
I only ever shot with 5 rolls of that, and that's when I was in the States last. Pardon me. When I was in the States in the autumn of 2017. Yeah, so I bought 5 rolls. Shot it, quite liked it, and then they stopped making it.
There you go.
I'm not going to go chasing it on eBay because it's just stupid, really. I'll just move on to something else.
I sold all mine to fund another camera, so. And I've already ordered it.
Shall I do a book review?
Yeah. Shall you?
Can do if you like, because
yeah,
I've been looking out for pinhole books, and I think there's a thread on the Lenses Podcast Facebook group all about our favorite books, and I think this is where I saw it, and I went on to the secondhand bookseller Abbey Books, ABEBOOKS, and I've mentioned these guys before. It's a website that links up secondhand bookshops around the world, and I found this book on there, and it is
cool.
It is Ghosts in the Landscape, Vietnam Revisited. And it's a book of photographs by a gentleman called Craig J. Barber. And Craig is living in the Pacific Northwest. So some of you guys who listen may well know him. I think he lives, from what my notes say here, he lives and teaches in the Pacific Northwest, Washington State. And I want to say it's Laconer, but I don't know how to pronounce it. LACONNER. And let me read a bit of his bio, because it's a great book, but also some of the words and stories fantastic as well. So Craig is, he's a photographer who travels and works using antiquarian processes and focuses on the cultural landscape. Now, I'll come on to what he means by that in a minute. It says, during the past 25 years, I've focused my camera on Vietnam, Havana, and the Catskills region of New York State. I've heard of the Catskills, but I don't know where that is. Documenting
up north by New York State. They're out.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he's been documenting cultures in rapid transition and fading from memory. So that's what he means by the cultural landscape. It's capturing it as it changes and as it's fading from memory. My work has been exhibited throughout the United States, Europe, and Latin America, and is represented in several prominent museum and private collections, including the Museum of Fine Arts, Houston, the Victoria and Albert Museum in London, the Brooklyn Art Museum, the George Eastman House, Rochester, New York, and the Museo Nacional de Bellas Artes, Buenos Aires, Argentina, among others. He says, I've received several grants, including from the Seattle Arts Commission, Polaroid Corporation, and the New York Foundation for the Arts. In 2006, Umbridge Editions published my book, Goats, Ghosts in the Landscape, Vietnam Revisited. Now, what do I say about this book? First of all, it's not going to cost you the earth. I got my first edition from Abbey Books for less than £10. Delivered, and it's just £10 that you must spend. If you love pinhole photography, you must spend it. That's my instruction to you. And Craig says, I began returning to Vietnam early in 1995, and Craig was an 18-year-old when he fought in Vietnam against the Viet Cong. My intent: photographing, writing, and learning about the land I first saw as a combat marine many years before. Full of youthful ignorance upon my initial arrival in Vietnam, saddened and still ignorant upon my departure, I returned home with more questions than answers, and more anger than I care to admit. This time, as he goes back, older, gentler, and more mature, I hoped for a better understanding, carrying vivid memories, some good, some not so, all intense, all needing clarification. I navigated each day through the landscape of my emotions. And so this book has a couple of essays. There's one, a short introduction by Craig, and then an introduction by Alison Devine, who certainly was, I don't know if she still is, the curator of photography at George Eastman House. But what I enjoyed at the back of this book is a section written by Craig, which is very easy to read. So it's not one of these arty, farty artist statements. This is called My Journey. And he starts off by saying, the plane jostles back and forth in heavy turbulence as we descend through thick rain clouds. So he then describes his journeys that he made three journeys, I think, from about 1995 to 2005 when he published his book. So he must have gone back. And he actually met some people that remembered him from when he served as an 18-year-old. And because Craig is 6'6", and if you've ever been to Vietnam, most people don't get above 5 foot. And I've been to Vietnam. I went a few years ago, and people come up to you, even now, people come up to you in the street. If you've got light skin, my daughter, very pale skin, and people would come up to her and just touch her, you know? I mean, it's weird in our Western society where we value our private sort of space, to have people, strangers, come up to you and start touching your face and stroking you, you know, is a bit weird. And it was when he went in 95, it was much more than just touching. I mean, it was touching, but it was several people all around you, you know. And he talks about one guy lifted his trouser leg up to look at his legs and things. And it's just, you know, but if you go to Vietnam today, and I think probably more so if you go out into the countryside, and Craig journeyed into the areas he fought, and he went into a village, and he met a young lady who was his age now, but who he knew when he was out there. And he says at the end of this little section, he says, I'm deeply involved with Vietnam. I am captivated by it, haunted by all of the death. I cry for those whose lives I witnessed lost and for those whose loss of life I caused. There was cruelty, evil, and horror. The pain is forever. And there are times I'm afraid, and there are times I'm angry. There are times when I just sit and let the tears flow. But coming here was not only the right thing, it was one of the smartest things I've ever done. Before, it was about death and dying, kill or be killed. It was totally crazy. Now it's about learning, caring, and forgiving. Now it is about seeing. So Craig takes a homemade pinhole camera with him. He doesn't go into detail about the sort of technical side of it. Other than this pinhole camera is a moderate wide angle, I would say. But I'm not really certain. But what strikes me about this whole series of images, he's clearly used it as a very cathartic experience. But all of his images in this book are diptychs, which is right up your street, Corey. And yep. he's done some. He either knows this camera inside out, so he knows exactly what the frame lines are, or maybe there's a bit of stitching together, you know, in Photoshop. I don't know, but that however he's done it, they're very, very effective. I'm staring at a triptych of a temple and a tree, and they're lined up pretty perfectly. Really, and there's a lot of very atmospheric. There's not many with people in, but you know, there were some people, but they just kind of disappeared. He has obviously got some. Sure. He's got some with people in where he's had them stand still, you know. But they're just images in the villages in the back country of Vietnam. Lots of houses, dwelling places, but they take on this panoramic aspect. Because he's using this diptych technique to stitch these images together. So I'd thoroughly recommend this book. I know you can still get copies of it on Abbey Books. I got it shipped to my home for less than £10. And the essays at the back are just worth it. So it's published by, it's called Ghosts in the Landscape, Vietnam Revisited, and it's by Craig J. Barber. Craig has a website. Craig J. Barber Photography and Workshops, and there's contact information, a bit about his book there. So if you go to Craig J. Barber, type that in, Photography and Workshops, he does tutoring, there's stuff about him. And if any of you out there know him and think he'd make a, well, I'm sure he'd make a good guess whether he'd want to come on and talk to us, I don't know. But it's a fantastic book, and you'll find details of it on his website. I think it's the only book he's published, but I'd thoroughly recommend it. He makes all his images, actually, for the technical side, are contact prints made on watercolor paper, and platinum prints on watercolor paper.
Cool.
I couldn't really tell that from the reproduction because I don't know whether it's watercolor paper has any texture to it or anything, but it's apparently what they are. But they are rather lovely. So cool. Check it out.
Check it out. Cool. Well, I like that he doesn't really let you know too much about what he's shooting with.
Yeah, because that's not what it's about, is it? It's about...
He
refers in his essay at the back where he talks about his journey through the landscape with his translator and the people he meets. You know, he clearly, a 6'6" white guy with a black box, with a black box on a tripod, clearly attracts some attention, you know? And I think he finds bits of him find it really irritating. It begins to wear him down after a while. But I think this is clearly a journey he needed to make, because if you went through that war, you've got to come to terms with it somehow. And I think he came to terms with it by revisiting it and capturing it using a pinhole camera, which I think is bloody brilliant, really, to be honest.
Right. Yeah, that's awesome. I'll have to see if I can find a copy of it so I can check it out.
Well, I think Abbey Books is a worldwide, you know, you can go on there, and a lot of the books I buy are shipped from the USA, so you must be able to use that website. So have a look on Abbey Books, okay. ABEBOOKS, and you'll find it on there. I think it's still in print, actually, because I'm sure I saw some more expensive copies, but mine's hardback. It's in pretty mint condition. I don't know how many editions, you know, he's printed, but this one says first edition.
Cool.
And can't recommend it. I forget who shared it originally on the Facebook group, but as I say, for £10 delivered to my home, it seemed good.
Worth it.
Yeah, good value. And you can't beat books, can you? And fantastic. And I've got a couple of others I'll talk about sometime as well, but thoroughly recommend this.
Right. Cool.
Over to you, buddy.
Well, I don't have anything else to talk about, do you?
No, I could rattle on about the James Guerin camera, but I think I'll probably leave that for now.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm still playing with it, really. I've got some. All I will say is that James Guerin 8x10 camera, which I was using over Christmas, I've made some negatives, some on X-ray film, and they look to be nice negatives. They're not very good for my alternative processes. They need a bit more contrast. But I was hoping today, before the show, to go in the darkroom and make some straight contact prints on normal darkroom paper, because I think they'll make lovely darkroom prints, and I'm going to try and do that before next week and get those posted. What did you
shoot pictures of? Was it those pictures you were out at the fins, wasn't it, with the post?
Yes, that's it. Yeah, so that's a lovely looking negative. That's out on. It's not in the fens. It's right on the North Norfolk coast, and that's a sort of like a marsh area. And that was when I was with, when I was with Joe Baker and Neil Piper, and Jimmy. No, not Jimmy. Who else? Did I go? Oh, Alex Yates.
Evil Chutney.
Yeah. Joe Baker. Yeah. So I shot a couple of frames on that trip because I only have the 1 8x10 double dark side because these things are expensive. 8x10.
Yeah, that's why I haven't got one.
I found a relatively cheap one from a UK supplier, but even that was
How much did you pay for it?
About £60 still, you know.
Yeah. Wow, I haven't found any that cheap. They're all in like hundreds of dollars of range.
Yeah, I got it home, and then the bit which is held, the section that's held together by the tape at the bottom, that all fell off. So I had to, I used Gorilla tape and redid it all, and that's been fine.
Yeah,
and there are no light leaks or anything.
I'm thinking about using. If I'm going to do 8x10, I'm not going to use film holders. I'm just going to go make myself a. The box in boxes on it, just do one shot.
But to be honest, as I was gifted this camera, and I thought, well, okay, I'll just find a relatively cheap holder. And I'm glad I did because it allows me to use two sheets of X-ray film. And then when I was out over Christmas, I was out with Julian, and there was this abandoned wooden boat. I think I might have even done a face cast on it on the Facebook group.
Yeah, you did. Yeah,
The camera was really close to it, you know. I mean, not quite touching, but it was really close. And the image on the negative shows the whole boat and a bit of space around it. So you can get pretty close to it. And I think if you go onto James Guerin's Flickr page, some of the pictures he's got on there are with this actual camera, and he's done some great work with it. So. It's a work in progress, and it's got five pinholes. I've only used the middle pinhole so far, but
I ask you if it has the rise.
Yeah, so I'm going to use on my next outing. I'm going to use the top pinhole, which gives me more sky and 2/3 of sky and 1/3 of landscape. So the top pinhole moves the horizon down in the frame. But just to play with it to start with, I was using the center pinhole. I was getting there's not much light fall off. I've used paper in it as well, and with normal Ilford paper, and there was quite a bit of vignetting, but not so much with the X-ray film. It's considering it's 8x10 and a big film area, the light coverage is pretty good. So watch this space, really. I'll play with it a bit more, but I am going to make some contact prints with those negatives, and I'll share those shortly.
I like that that rise and fall function.
Yeah, I also want to use it like Lena was doing with her 7 pinhole. So I'm going to use it and do some portraits with all 5 pinholes open at the same time. I do that in the summertime. Find a willing.
You have to get everybody, get your whole family together and do family portraits with it.
Yeah, well,
get somebody to.
But you're suggesting one in each pinhole. That would be awkward to arrange. I don't think I'm clever enough.
No. Just get clustered in a group, you know what I mean? And have somebody that that's not a family member there, and they can open the shutters for
you. They can,
you
know? Yeah. Yeah.
That'd be fun.
Lots to do when I retire.
Yeah. Then you still have to work on that neck tattoo.
Yeah, I'm working on that. Yeah.
I can't wait to see that. All right.
Well, you know what? We've gone a whole show without any technical difficulties, so that's a result.
Yeah. So I think we're going to try Friday night. We're going to do a really short show, and we're going to try to do some new technology.
We're going to do Mike Gutterman suggested and Graham from Sunny 16 suggested we try and avoid the dropouts. Well, the dropouts haven't really been our fault. I don't really think it's the problem with Anchor. I think it's just been the
connection.
The couple of guests we've had recently, they've had lousy Wi-Fi connections. So I think Anchor is in itself is fine. But if we go and record to Skype using the record facility, then even if we get dropouts, in theory, Corey can edit it. He's got the choice anyway. But we don't want to, Corey doesn't want to spend, and I certainly don't want to spend hours editing this show because, it takes up enough time during the week as it is just looking for guests and keeping the social media commitments going.
Yeah.
So we want to thank you all for listening and apologize for the last couple of shows where the technical difficulties got the better of us, but
yeah, our guests were amazing. We can get them back when we get everything sorted out a little bit better.
We just look forward to the rest of the year. We look forward to our first year of
we're coming up on a year.
We're
at this is show 47, so you know we've got a few more shows.
What was the date of your when you and Mark first put the show out? What was that date?
Let's see.
March sometime, was it?
It was March. It was like March the 1st. It was the first Friday of March, I think.
Wow. Well, it is really close.
It was the very beginning of March. Yeah.
We're getting guests lined up into March now, aren't we? So.
Yep. What are we going to do? Something special. We'll see. Anyway.
We'll see. Yeah.
Going to be a surprise. All right. Well, everybody, thanks for hanging out and listening. We hope everybody has a great week. Normally we would say let our guests tell everybody where they're at, but we have their guests. You know where to find me on Instagram at Pinhole Cannon and the Facebook group, which is the Lenses Podcast Facebook group.
540 members now.
Wow. It's growing.
It is. So thank you all for participating. Yeah. Thank you all for participating. So brilliantly in the Facebook group. That's a great place to hang out. The other great place is the Pinhole Workshop Facebook group, which is about the same size as ours. They're a great bunch of guys as well. We hope to have them on the show before too long. Many of you who listen to us also on that group as well. There's a lot of crossover. So two great Facebook groups to hang out in. And
I'm starting to waste time. I'm starting to enjoy Facebook more than I am enjoying Instagram with all the ads, and now I think there's.
Is it getting worse?
I think it's getting ready to get even more worse because I think they're getting ready to start doing like a paid version of Instagram where, like, if you pay, you don't get any ads.
Yeah. So what they're doing now is getting people pissed off enough to when they introduce please give me a free version, a paid version.
And if they do that, I'm probably going to be getting close to I've stuck through all the changes. I've been with Instagram for a really long time, shortly after it was started. And I've stuck through all the changes and done everything and no problems.
Yeah.
But I think if it goes to that and it kind of gets into that paid subscription thing where you don't have any ads and they kick the ads up a notch. I don't know what I'm going to do. I might keep my personal.
Well, you still need a place to view images, which is what I still use Flickr for, because I'm discovering lots of interesting pinhole people, some of whom will eventually get on the show, I guess. But it's a really good way of viewing pictures. But that's getting expensive now. I think $40 or $50 a year to be to get unlimited space up there.
But you can still do Flickr for free, can't you?
You can, but you're limited to 1,000 pictures, and I've got about 1,300 or 1,400 images up there, And if I don't if I don't carry on my pro subscription, which I have at the moment, I think I paid $20 odd a year, which is not much, but it's going to double in March, and I haven't yet. In fact, I've opted out at the moment. But if I continue to opt out, they're just going to chop 400 or 500 pictures off my feed, you know. And
right,
so I kind of feel obliged. I'm probably going to have to just stick with it because it's a for me it's a valuable resource, you know. And
well, I know that if I ended up not doing Instagram, I would probably put that time into Flickr.
Yeah.
That's probably what I would end up doing, would be just putting some more time
in. Anyway, Flickr. We need somewhere where we can look at people's work and make, you know, and Flickr's good because you can dive into the tags and see what sort of techniques they're using, what paper they're using, whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it provides a good way to contact people. So, you know, Instagram is similar, I guess, you know. But if we just have to rely on Twitter and Facebook, then we start to lose something, I think.
Yeah, I do too. All right. Well, everyone have a great week. Thanks for listening to us ramble on. And next week's guest is Jeff McConnell. So if you know Jeff, be ready. He's going to be here.
Is he another? I think he's another Northwest Mafia person, isn't he?
Yeah, he's in that. He's in the ring. He's in the family.
Yep.
All right.
Okay. See you, Corey.
We'll talk to everybody soon. Yep.
Take care. Bye bye.
Bye, everybody. Bye. Did you listen to it yet?
No, I forgot you sent it, actually.
It's all right. I listened to it and I wrote down a bunch of. He had a few questions in it, you know?